I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
What's something you think is underrated?
I think underrated is plants and flowers in your home. I didn't realize how nice it is to have another living thing in my home besides me. It's really done. I used to think, like, for me, like, a plant's like a baby. So I was like, I can't get pregnant with a plant yet. I'm not responsible enough. The plant baby will die. And I'm not trying to experience that trauma. So I hadn't done it. But now that I've been in my house for so long, I was like, I should get some plants and some stuff in here. And it really has, like, kind of brightened my mood a bit. If that makes sense. Like, do you guys have plants in your homes?
Mm-hmm.
I still don't trust myself. I have animals, but I don't trust myself with a plant. I need to
Jamie,
unpack that.
Jamie, the animal's
that.
Alive. Well, they're both alive.
The plants don't make noise when
if you don't
they're like,
give them water. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my fear.
Jamie, yeah. is that the alert system your dog and cat are on right now?
It's like,
we're dehydrated.
Yeah, I'm not responsible enough to keep plants from dying, but doesn't stop me from trying.
How is being a plant parent?
It does make me feel better than people. So thank you guys for not owning plants, because now I feel just the superiority of owning a plant. Some of us, you know, create nature, others cannot.
It's true.
You know, like God created the heaven and the earth, I created one plant. No, but it's good. It's still very early. So, you know, anything could happen. Don't ask me about this plant the next time that I come on this show, because I don't know if it's going to be
never.
Alive.
Yeah.
It sounds like a Tinder relationship now, too, where you're like, so far, so good, but, you know, we'll
yeah.
see how it goes.
Right.
I want to talk about this John Amici study. The former NBA player and organizer was talking about this study where they basically sent a questionnaire to 10,000 respondents from white-collar environments to ask the question of, like, what are the traits that they associate with Black people? And the answers for themselves were, like, beautiful, strong, athletic, proud, music, sports. So as he points out, not exactly a broad swath of ideas, but at least it's not negative. But then he pointed out that when you ask those same 10,000 people, what do you think other people associate with Black people? The answers became criminal, athletic, poor, inferior, uneducated, gangs, dangerous. And he was pointing out that they haven't found those other people yet. It's just the people who are answering the questions all giving themselves credit for having the still stereotypical but positive, not racist view, but assuming that out there in other people there exists these like very, you know, overtly racist ideas. And it just reminded me of that Sony email hack leak that I bring it up a lot, but it's always like stuck in my head. This Sony executive who was arguing that they shouldn't greenlight Denzel Washington's Equalizer 2. And he said, I'm not saying The Equalizer should not have been made or that African-American actors should not have been used. I personally think Denzel Washington is the best actor of his generation.
So whatever he says next will not be racist just because right. He qualified that. Okay.
Casting him is saying we're okay with a double and not a home run, basically, is what he said. And then he blames it on international audiences being racist. I just think that that is a more prevalent dynamic than a lot of white people realize. The idea that, well, it's out there, other people are racist, and that's just the reality that I'm dealing with, but I'm one of the good ones. And it's just, that is upholding systemic racism and systemic white supremacy just as much when you're just assuming that in other people.
Yeah. To be clear, when you center whiteness, you are centering whiteness. Like you, especially if you are in a position of power, you know, I've been a stand-up comic for a long time, and I am acutely aware that like when I tell jokes in front of an audience, almost 99% of the time, I am telling jokes, even though they're Black jokes, I'm telling them to a white audience, to a white like palette. Even if they're from my perspective, they're to that white perspective. And the people who are in charge of like making decisions of like getting things on TV and putting movies out and distributing them, like they are very acutely aware that globally, it's accepted that the Western world is white. Like a lot of foreign countries, when they think of foreigners, they don't think of like a large multicultural like swath. They think of white people like first. And the only way that's going to change is if people actually make a stand against it. Or else it's just like, I just think it's a shame that like in the entire course of like human history, like we've had the film industry for like a little over 100 years, and it's been centered in whiteness that whole time. You know, if an asteroid crashes into the Earth and we only ever got to center whiteness, I think that'd be pretty sad. So do better, I guess. Mm. Can you make this black and white?
Right. Yeah, please listen to this in black and white. Even the things that they were associating, right? Like athletic, music, sports, those are because those are actually places Black people have been able to center themselves in just off of merit, off because the art was good enough, because the skill was good enough to be the best. And it's not movie, like to your point, even saying, they're not saying movies or books or other things. And I think it's interesting too, just like what you're saying, Jack, psychologically of like, imagine like even if you were at a party, right? And people were telling like embarrassing stories.
Yeah.
And you know, you had one that happened to you that was so embarrassing, but you knew it's like, well, they don't know me. I can say this happened to somebody else.
Yeah.
And I'll do that to shield myself from fully owning the embarrassment of this moment. And it still has the effect of me telling somebody an actual moment that happened that they can recognize happened to somebody else. It's like the same way you could do that with saying like, well, what do you think? And it's like, okay, this is what I think black people could be. They're beautiful, strong, athletic. Now, what do you think other people? Well, I think other people probably think that they're dangerous. They'll probably mug you or like this one guy at the gym like might be looking at your butt all the time. I'm sorry, what was that last part? Nothing. It does allow this sort of like psychological, your defense mechanisms to come down when you're starting to frame things in the context of another person. Damn. But somehow like, a lot more negative stuff comes out because you're offered this distance or separation from those ideas.
I'm going to try that on people I date.
You're going to try that on people you date?
Yeah. What do you think other girls would think, complain about me?
That's literally, so that interview with John Amici happened on like a life coach's podcast, I think. Mm-hmm. The life coach was like, that's who I don't generally give life coaches. That's not where I get most of my psychological studies from. But the person was saying that they actually ask people like to get a sense of what they think. They ask people what they think other people think, because that's like where you get the unguarded truth from people.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm going to trick some people in my life into saying some stuff.
I think about that too. If like I've been critical of like a personal friend's work, mm-hmm. I've used the defense. Well, you know, like some people say,
yeah,
right. Because I don't want to be like, yo, this is trash. I'm going to be real with you. This is trash. This is right. trash.
I just don't think people will get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And I do. Yeah, trust
I
me.
Do.
I get it. I think you're the greatest artist of our generation.
If I saw this and I didn't know you and if I weren't friends with you, I would also still think that this is good, but I'm saying that other people would not.
It's the same thing. Yeah, we always have to preserve ourselves, or we never want to come off as the, you know, the bad guy.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, whether that's bad for being honest or objectively bad because you have really, you know, shitty racist ideas in your head.
Totally.
Yeah. What is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
I recently searched to find who was the costume designer on the movie Hackers, 1995.
Ooh.
That movie I recently watched for the first time on VHS. You're welcome. And it was life-changing. One of the best movies I've ever seen in terms of how advanced all of the costumes are. And also, I have never screamed so much watching a movie because everything they were saying made no sense. It's like when you watch cable news and people say stuff and you're just like, what?
Wait, like, so what? When you say their clothes they're wearing are advanced, like what do you mean by that?
Okay, so it's hard to describe, but basically in the movie, it is about... Number one, Matthew Lillard's costumes in that movie are the best thing. So Matthew Lillard plays
peak
this like
Lillard.
Peak Lillard, teen hacker. He's got like shoulder length hair and he's wearing it in four braids. So they're like the size of pigtails, but there's four of them around his head. But they're not like braids. They're not like little braids. They're just four. He's just got four braids on his head.
They're just braids.
And there is another hacker who the first time you see him is wearing two separate leopard print items. He's wearing a leopard print top and he's wearing leopard print pants. There's a lot of chains. Matthew Lillard wears a lot of like really, oh my God. At one point, Matthew Lillard wears a sweater vest that is the Lou Reed Transformer sweater, but the top is like glittery and scalloped. And he wears that. And then he wears a belt that has a ragdoll on it for no reason.
Like it's connected, just hanging from it?
Just on the belt.
Most of Matthew Lillard's costumes, I would say, in this movie weigh at least 30 pounds. Like,
yeah.
There's
but then
a
he's
lot
also wearing these, like, paper thin tank tops a lot.
Yeah.
But then his pants are, like, extremely weighed down. Oh my God, Angelina Jolie in this movie, please. Like, she wears the coolest fucking biker jacket I've ever seen. At one point, she wears, like, just an all white. Everybody is wearing, like, O'Neill sport tops in this. You know, like the rash guard. She's wearing rash guards the whole movie. I mean, what is the tiny glasses, tiny little glasses.
The line.
How old was Angelina Jolie when this movie came out?
She must have been very young.
Yeah, we for some reason did a Bechdel cast on this episode. I know why. It was because my birthday. It was my birthday, and I wanted to. But the line that always sticks with me, like, there's so many corny lines, but the line that it's like, there is no right or wrong. There's only fun and boring.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Hack
the planet, baby.
And you like that because it completely defines your generation, right?
And this is, yeah. This,
absolutely.
I was shaped by this.
There's one point where the main character, whose name is Dade, gets an email.
AKA Crash Override.
Crash Override, AKA Zero Cool. So there's this like FBI agent who's trying to get him to be a hacker for the FBI or whatever. And he sends Dade an email, but he doesn't just send him an email that Dade reads on his computer. What happens, what you see is Dade receives a package in the mail. He signs for a package. He opens the package. Inside the package is a tiny computer. He opens the computer and there's a video of the FBI guy going, hey, don't you want to join the FBI? And then Dade is like, oh, fuck. Imagine if every time you got an email, you had to sign for a package and somebody gave you like just a little computer. It's just the most retro future shit you can imagine. And it's like so hard to wrap my head around because it's so different from how we actually use the internet. And yet this movie was made less than 30 years ago.
That's amazing.
It's very amazing.
My favorite example of Hollywood, like movies misunderstanding the way computers function is from the year before that, Disclosure, where they use virtual reality to like store files in a filing cabinet. So it's just the very basic interface of like what a desktop computer does, but they are doing it via like walking down a hallway and like opening a door to like steal the file that is like hidden there. It sounds like we're working with a similar version.
Exactly. '90s Hollywood was desperately trying to take the most boring age of computers, which was just like straight up, it's like numbers on a screen. Like it's, you can't really do anything. It's just gateway. Yeah. But they're trying to make it visually interesting. So in all of the scenes where Dade is hacking, you just get a close up on his face and then it cuts to like a DMT sort of visual of like all these like Fibonacci spirals and like equations floating across the screen like over and over.
I think that there's, in any year where there is a Googling sequence or a coding sequence, it's never fun to watch. It's never, ever, ever fun to watch. But the fun part that, so I appreciate that they made the effort. And I also like, my favorite part of any frantic Googling sequence, like especially on TV, is like what word they come up with that
the
isn't Google or Bing.
Yes.
Yeah, they're like, it's booble. And you're just like, yeah.
Gobble.
Yeah, yeah, we gotta gorkle this. You're like, you have to what?
They do this a lot on Riverdale where they like, they replace the name with something very close, but they always make the characters say it out loud. So yeah, they're always like, we gotta gorkle this.
Or there was that like phase of television that I want to say, it's tapered off now as far as I know, but like in the early 2010s, there was a lot of, I think, Bing money being sunk into getting name drops on TV shows. Where it would be just like, I don't know.
Oh my God.
I don't know where it is. I guess I gotta Bing it. You're like, oh, yikes.
Yeah, you see people scrolling through pages of Bing results and you're like, what? Oh, what is it?
Has anyone done this before?
Didn't Bing get caught for like just basically using Google results also?
They got Bing. Just,
like, plugged Google into their thing.
That's so funny.
Yikes.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which is morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
And we're back. A story that was on CNN, actually, about Camden, New Jersey, which abolished their police years ago. And it was after very similar complaints to what's going on in Minneapolis. And they've had a lot of success. It hasn't been perfect, but they've seen the violent crime in the city cut in half, whereas a lot of the people who are so shocked about the idea of abolishing the police are amazed that, like, people, they just assume that because humans are cruel or their version of humanity is cruel, that it's just going to be a complete, you know, free for all of people killing and robbing each other. And actually, when they abolished their police and, you know, reformed it in a new way that was from the ground up, they saw violent crime cut in half. And the reforms are all things like police abolitionists are talking about, like having better representation. And yeah, it was, it's just an interesting story that if you are one of the people who's like police abolition is a non-starter, you should at least realize that your version of what would happen if the police were abolished in your town, you know, you need to learn more, because that clearly isn't what happened in one of the places that actually did it.
Yeah, it's like, and not for nothing, it's not a non-starter because it's starting.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if you Google it, it's not as scary as it seems. It doesn't mean that there won't be people to come that you can call to help you. A lot of it is about unarming people who should not have guns in the first place. You don't need guns to do a wellness check. We've seen so many wellness checks go from the person actually was fine when we got here, but then we killed them. So, you know what I mean? There's just certain areas of policing that need to be more specialized and have people who actually have the skills to help. One of those is domestic violence cases. Like, what, you know, those police aren't helping people who are victims of domestic violence. So not proportionately, if you look at the numbers, and if you look at the numbers within the force, woo, that 20 to 40% jumps out at you.
Yeah.
So it's just like there's still going to be people to protect and help you, but there's going to be care instead of, you know, what we're getting right now, which is just aggressive police who are terrified. Apparently, they're not always terrified. We've seen those videos. They are killing people on purpose. So, yeah. Google it. It's not as crazy as it sounds. It doesn't mean that there's just going to be robbers and cops breaking into your home because there's no popo to stop them.
Yeah, it's not an anarchist like platform. It's organized. There are like, and I also understand, like we were talking about a little bit yesterday, like everyone is on a pretty steep, like most people are on a pretty steep learning curve with this stuff. I know I am as well. And it's like, you know, 2 weeks ago, could I speak to police abolition at length? No, I couldn't. I knew that it was something that I liked the concept of, but I couldn't, you know, speak to it in detail. And so it's like, yeah, just, you know, learn about places that have already put things in place, learn about police reform and how it has not actually serviced much and usually just stands to waste a ton of taxpayers' money. Like there's, you know,
yeah,
we're all learning shit.
Police abolition is not as extreme as it sounds, and the current version of police is way, way more extreme than we give it credit for and than our mainstream media gives it credit for.
Right, and we're seeing it. It's weird to see mainstream media lie to you while you're watching a video, like on voiceover. We all saw in Buffalo where the police officers attacked that 75-year-old man. But I listened to voiceover from the news that was like, he fell into the ground. And I was like, hey, we saw him put what?
the ground. Yeah.
Like the cops running over people is not something that we should all want to accept.
Those people were run over by a car, not attacked by you know, murderous police officer. That's the thing we're seeing a lot more of that I would think would be sort of an alarming trend is white supremacist police and just loose white supremacists, unaffiliated white supremacists, driving their cars into crowds of protesters. But it seems like the mainstream media, that kind of goes against the grain of what their typical areas of interest are. It does seem like the Buffalo video was a turning point. People were like, that doesn't seem right. And also old white people were like, that guy looks like me. And they just pushed him down. What the hey?
Yeah.
And so it does seem like we're starting to see a deluge of all these police videos and videos of police violence that have just been like, I don't know. They've just not been showing people. We've just only seen, like, I've seen a lot of them on social media for weeks, but like now I feel like they're breaking over into the mainstream. Again, it's like shocking that we were in a version of reality where that was seen as normal, like what we're seeing in these videos. But at the same time, I'm glad that people are starting to see them at least, and that the media is starting to show them. Although at the same time, the media, like the local news, is no longer covering the marches during daytime TV. They're not preempting local programming. So, you know, now that there's not, you know, looting to show, footage of looting, I feel like, you know, even though the weekend was the biggest protest yet, they didn't cut in. It was only on CNN. It wasn't the local news covering it like during the day.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've seen how Donald Trump has really attacked mainstream media for their reporting on his behavior. But the bottom line is that truly mainstream media has almost started to serve a purpose of protecting the state and protecting, you know, the norms, the societal norms that we've had that have not been okay. And it's very disheartening and disappointing because the news is what is informing most of our voter population. And it's the reason Twitter's always shocked when someone that we never thought would get elected gets elected. It's because there's a silent majority who they get their news from these people who are being so deeply irresponsible. And our politicians are afraid of the police. De Blasio got on television and told people that he thought it was fine that the police ran over his citizens.
Yeah.
He said it. He said it. In LA, our own police chief got on the news and blamed us for killing George Floyd.
Yeah.
So there's a real disconnect with these people, and it comes from the money, guys. We can't change policy with people who are afraid of the police. The police have been threatening him. They've been they doxed his daughter in New York, Mayor de Blasio's daughter. Like, Eric Garcetti out here in LA is very afraid of them as well. Like, we cannot change people who are thugs and bullies. We have to take their money away. It's the only way.
Right. And I would also recommend, if especially for the bigger cities, just look at how the police budget dwarfs any social service that is being given. There are some horrifying graphics. In LA, it's over 50% of the city's budget, but from city to city, it's billions of dollars being invested to, you know, accomplish what exactly?
Nothing.
Yeah.
And our homeless could be off the street. You could actually walk down the street and not be super depressed to see people without homes and without care. You know, there's so many social programs and services that we're neglecting. And like, I've been seeing this a lot everywhere, but people are like, it's scary to think about defunding the police, but we've been defunding healthcare and education since the beginning of this country.
Right.
And those are things that you need. You don't need cops. Do you wake up every day and need cops? No, maybe one day, someday. As a black, I try not to call them. If I was getting robbed right now, I wouldn't call the police. I'd be like, look, here are my things. Let's just hash this out. I'm like, good day, sir. It turns into just a meeting. Yeah, no. Stay up. Yeah, use those cards in the next 3 hours because I am going to turn them off. Bye-bye now.
It's interesting. I mean, even on a local level of news reporting, because I know that most of the stories that we personally come into contact with are how the gigantic city protests are going and what the reality is of being at a protest that becomes people being, you know, like tear gassed and just driven at the hands of the police versus how the news spins it. But even on a local level, there was a protest in my hometown last week, and my aunt and uncle went to the beginning and then they left. And later in the night, the Brockton, Massachusetts police force just let loose on people before their curfew had even started. There was tear gassing, people were hurt, and all you saw on the news the next morning and how a lot of my family who were not there interpreted it was, well, things just got wild and people started looting. When, you know, if you look at the accounts of people who were there, there is a clearly marked, and it's mostly on Twitter and it's mostly via live stream, but there's a clear, like, in like small local places, it's the same everywhere. And it's all you see is, well, look at, they smashed a Dunkin' Donuts. And you're like, that is not the point. And that neglects so much of what happened. It ignores the precedent for looting in the first place. And it also just ignores everything between a peaceful protest and things arriving at that place. Like that, you don't get there in a void. Like the police, and I don't know, it's been bizarre to talk to my family about, you know, it's like there's people I went to high school with were there. They were tear gassed. Like, how do you account for that in the news that you see? And it's just, you know, it goes down to a very local level of like how stories are covered.
And Americans, we've gotten used to everybody lying to us. I mean, our president just lies. Like, it's gotten to the point where it's not even outrageous anymore. We're like, oh, yeah, he lied about that. Anyways. And it's weird to see everybody at every level doing it. The police have been lying as much as they possibly can. The mayor in Seattle lied and said that they were no longer going to tear gas their citizens. But it turned out that they had just run out of tear gas. And as soon as they re-upped, they started tear gassing people again.
The next night.
So you just made this statement as a flex because you were literally out of tear gas? They're like, no, we care about people. We're no longer going to gas y'all because we love y'all. Seattle, be up. Then the next day, they were like, oh, we got some more? Okay, get it out there. Spray them all. Like,
we take it back. We take it back. We take it back. It's so, and I think that there's also like, I mean, we've been seeing so many journalists are getting intentionally harmed by police, and it's journalists who are trying to be on the ground and report the story accurately that are literally losing eyes, and like, you know, go to Robert Evans coverage in Portland. Like, journalists who are trying to cover the story on the ground accurately are being intentionally targeted. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get a sense of how the police feel about just the general state of affairs right now, the NYPD union leader had a press conference. And it was just like he was so bitter and resentful and petulant, and it just felt like you were watching a child have a meltdown. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a very, you know, police are very defensive and, you know, very good at closing lines around one another, and I think that's, yeah, that's going to be something that has to be reckoned with as this progresses. Miles, you brought this story forward that I hadn't read that, but I have read other stories like it that really underscore like that it seems like we could be on the precipice of just all out chaos, like virtual civil war.
We're on a knife's edge for sure.
Yeah.
And this story really, you know, so what happened was there's a multiracial family, and including like a couple. It was a 16-year-old daughter, the mother of the husband in this couple, and they were like in this town in, I believe it's Forks, Washington.
Yeah.
So what is that? Is that where Twilight's from?
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, not important.
Might be where the green room is from also, though. Pacific Northwest is
so they're
scary.
In Washington, and this was happening in Clallam County, and these people were shopping for camping equipment. They're going on a camping trip. Then suddenly when they come out of the store, they were, quote, accosted by 7 or 8 carloads of people in the grocery store parking lot. The people repeatedly asked if they were members of Antifa. And the way this outlet says, an amorphous militant anti-fascist movement has become a bugaboo for some on the right. The second part I agree with. I don't know about whatever. And amorphous as well. And then so then the family said they're just there to camp. And they were like trying to move their car around these people and go to the campsite. And then they said a couple cars were following them. And they believed these people were armed following them. And when they got to the campsite, these people basically, that were camping, this family, they heard gunshots and chainsaws, and they're like, okay, we got to get the fuck out of here. And they put their camping shit back together, tried to drive out, and these people had basically blocked the road by chopping down the trees to block their car in, to box them in. And then these like high school students came and like got them out and like moved the trees and helped escort them to the sheriff's office. But it's like, what the fuck? So this is what's happening is like people will see a multiracial family with children, and the conclusion is that's Antifa who's trying to kill us, and we need guns because Antifa is here in the form of this multiracial family. That's what the people's perception is. And when you look, the story goes further back to be like, why the fuck did these people, what in the world gave them the idea that Antifa was going to be there? So there's a guy in a town over who said, basically did a post that said, you know, it's going to go down here in Sequim, Washington. He said, you may want to show your face to make sure this is a peaceful demonstration and to declare all lives matter. And then complete like that basically got the whole area of a few towns all riled up off of this guy's Facebook post, this guy who owns a gun store. And then his next posts were like these mea culpa videos where he was kind of being like, because nothing happened, like it was all bullshit. And he was saying that he had asked people to protect them from Antifa infiltrators based on, quote, intel he had received. And then this is something he said in the video, quote, I was told protesters were here. I was told Antifa's here and going to trash the town. I had all this intel. And then basically then goes back and he said, I need people. This is the guy who started the first post. Said, I need people to bring it down a notch, including me. I'm sorry. I got pretty jacked up about what's going on in our country right now. That guy did have the wherewithal to be like, whoa,
I know.
It's at least articulate.
I know. It's so funny. And I will, you know, as much as I hate to, I will give credit for credit's due because it's so hard nowadays to get people to admit fault. But it really is like, yeah, this is the shit that gets people killed. And I wish that there was someone near who can say that, where it's like, bro, this is getting people killed. And I think we do need to like, we need to crack down on people doing that stuff. Like, we need to, you know, like the same way you got Trump saying when people looting, shooting, like if we have, cool, we know people are going to be so afraid to move on Trump, but at the very least, when people are posting videos, we need to be banning these accounts. We need law enforcement. I mean, not like they're going to ever do shit for us, but we need some type of someone to step in and do something, you know? And that's what's so funny is like when people are like, well, what are afraid of like law enforcement, and they're like, well, you know, who's going to take care of this, that, and there? Where's law enforcement when a woman is sexually assaulted? Where's law enforcement in these cases? Where's law enforcement when people are trying to report stalkers and online bullying, which leads to that same person murdering them? They're never acting right on it. So that's why it's like, they not out here trying to put their life at risk. They out here trying to have a license to kill, which is why we need to dismantle police Bill of Rights. We need to get rid of that. If you kill someone, how the hell is it that if a doctor kills you or injures you trying to save your life, we can sue the shit out of them? But when someone is actively making an attempt on their life off of a bad judgment call, they get to walk free. Right. That on paper, just the map don't make sense.
Yeah, that's why I think more people can figure that out. And I think this story also underlines just how important it is for people who have these kinds of like the capabilities to take life, that they can actually see like what is actually going on. Because these people are just hopped up on a narrative of like Fox News and just saying Antifa is going to here to run our town out, and that's it. And everyone's prescribed. That's the same thinking everyone's on. And because everyone's looking at it one way, that's why black people are treated as a monolith, where all black people are a threat. And it's the same. The police are responding in the same way. That's why the police system, the system of policing as it is now, does not work. And that's why a lot of people are like, we need more social workers. You know, a social worker can look at a black or brown kid in an inner city area and say, I understand why this kid is frustrated. I understand why they're actually in the streets, because there's so little opportunity here that this is just the logical next step for them trying to survive. And then, but the police come and go, this kid's a fucking, oh shit, they're trying to fucking get me. Ah, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have to begin seeing things a little bit more clearly too, because it just, we're jumping to conclusions all like left and right.
All right, let's take another quick break and we'll be back to talk about Trump's latest lie.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
And we're back. Iffy, what is a myth? What's something people think is true, you know, to be false?
I think Miles is kind of hidden on that. I mean, there's this, you know, there's this kind of, everyone's like, you know, police brutality is bad, this, that, and that. But when we hear defund the police, everyone starts to slow up. Where it's like, well, we need the police. Mm. And really, we don't. I think there's a really good infographic going around showing the history of the police, showing this. And I was just talking about this with someone earlier today. When we just like, when you think about car chases, like with all the technology and all the tracking that we have, the systems we have in place, you know, do we really need 5-10 police cars going at dangerous speeds through civilian roads to chase down one car when we have a helicopter that already costs so much to fly anyway, that's mm-hmm. up with them, that can just follow and then have this person? Because cars need gas. The cars don't run forever. So it would just take you to actually sit down. And I think a lot of the problems is it's almost this brute force tactic when it comes to policing. And that's the problem at its core for mm-hmm. me. There's never any planning. There's like, it's never like, okay, what's the best, most efficient way to go about this, the safest way? It's always like, okay, let's grab guns,
they're a gang,
armor up, and let's run in there and just do whatever we want. And you
get the shit out of them.
Like, it's so interesting because a lot of people have been asking, like, oh, you know, the funny thing is, like, all these white families that are like, this is so hard to talk about with my kids, and people asking me about what I'm telling Naomi about this. And I was like, well, to be honest, Naomi, I'm letting her be just in her world of Sesame Street and ABC Mouse. The reason being is because my kid's black. This is a wall she's going to walk into eventually. So if I can let her just mm-hmm. have this like free few years of not knowing and experience what racism is, and then have that conversation when she inevitably comes to school and be like, hey, some kid called me nigger, or someone's being weird mm-hmm. to me. I'll be like, oh, okay, well, it's time to have this conversation. Because it really is like, it's something we deal with. And we're seeing live how cops operate, something that I'm sure me and Miles have known for a long time. One of my first lessons in this was when I was in Compton. This cop was chasing these dudes in my apartment complex, and he runs by and they run after him, and he ends up running down this nearby, it's like a, you know how some houses have property and then they're all the way, they're deeper into the space, but there's no through line. Like, he ran down it and it was kind of closed off, and we just hear like a bunch of gunshots. They shot their own canine. They shot the canine, and it was wild to see what happened with our own eyes and then see what was reported. And what happened was they caught him down there and just started firing on him, killed him. And then they said that he shot the police dog, and that's why they shot him. He had no gun on him. We saw, right. And what made it worse was the family that lived in that inlet area, they were gone, but they like let us come in their house, and they shot so much that there was bullets riddled all over their living room. And they said, luckily they were at church, because if they were at home, if they were watching TV, they would have just been shot up.
And that's the same story, man. You know what I mean? Like, it happens so much, and the police are able to, like, you know, obfuscate and try and just describe them murdering someone as like, man, then he shot the dog, and like, we had no choice. And that's because the people that hold them to account are their own.
Yeah.
who are like, all right, so what happened here? So like, what are we gonna say here? So he probably shot the dog. All right, here.
Okay. It really is.
Slip and fall.
There's
and then that's why we have no, and that's why like these reforms are so important. So like when people are like, well, let's ban chokeholds. I'm like, hold the fuck up, man.
Yeah.
That's, again, that should have happened decades ago. We're past that. And again, the police have completely ceded their right to say that they're an entity worth funding in any meaningful way. Like, again, we have to, like you're saying, if the police, especially for Black men, you'll never have a, I've never seen a cop say, sir, can I help you?
Not at all. And if it was just a sneaky way to just see where I'm going, where I'm coming
from. Right, where you're going. Yeah. Oh, you lost? Yeah. I'm like, okay, don't fucking concern troll me, dick. I know what the fuck, I know where this is going. Yeah. But like, I think it's all about being able to shift how we look at things, right? There's for example, the police, right? Siobhan Thomas, who is a writer, tweeted out, she writes on Rick and Morty, she said, for my friends and followers arguing for reforms of the police instead of major defunding, ask yourself this, have the police ever actually helped you or anyone you know, or is your idea of the police predominantly been formed by movies and television? Yeah. Because yes, there are people who have committed crimes. Unfortunately, I've had issues with in past relationships where like someone I was dating needed actual like law enforcement help and it just never came.
Yeah.
Just didn't.
And
happen.
Let's just talk about the fact that, you know, they want to pretend that, you know, we use something someone brought up that was good is we often use unarmed Black men, unarmed. But who cares if they were armed? How many times are we looking at these videos of armed white men who have murdered, who have hurt people, mm-hmm. who are somehow still able to be brought in without being shot? How many times? It's we see wild. It so many times, yet we have to point out that the Black people who are being slain are unarmed as if that makes a difference. Because it's true that they have it. There's just zero compassion. They see it as sport. They see it as a chance. It's almost as if they hear that if the suspect is Black, they know they can go in guns a-blazing. It's the same idea that made an off-duty cop and his son drive down on a Black man like it was hunting season. Like it really shows. And so I think you should, if we can make them go through so much before they can even grab a gun, you know, and I don't want to hear any of this, like, well, what about this, and this. Someone just showed a survey, only 48 cops were killed last year. And half of those were accidents that happened on themselves. So that means 20-something cops are actually at risk out of the hundreds of thousands of police. So with those odds, I think you shouldn't have access to an M16. Shouldn't have access. And if you're this cavalier about calling in the National Guard and other agencies, then what the fuck do you need guns for? If you're gonna call in over some peaceful protesters, you don't need guns. If you can't even,
because it's not what it's about. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just about saying, oh, well, we have people starting to band together across, you know, class and racial lines to actually identify a common threat. And it's us. So we're going to have to put that down because we need our money.
Oh, yeah.
And we need to keep expanding our police force. I mean, especially like when you think about L.A., the crime rate, and New York, I think crime rate's gone down by 75% since 1992.
Yeah.
Why do we need more cops? Like, I don't even understand the logic path of that. Yeah. There's less crime, more cops, 75% less since 92.
But that's not what they're telling themselves. Yeah. Like we talked on that, we talked earlier and on that Behind the Bastards about that David Grossman guy who goes around training them to think that their lives are like 8 times more in danger. There's this thing, this like cop speak that you hear, like, I even hear people like around me be like, well, I heard this from a cop. Like, cops love to act like they have this inside track to some information, and it's always fucking bullshit.
The people
it's
I know who are bullshit. I know two cops, they were shitty people in high school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And I don't even fuck with them. I just remember like when Facebook was cracking and like that first couple years out of college, I'm like, oh shit, that dude's a cop. Okay, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a well-known fact that people would join the police force with complexes and they plan to use them to lash out on citizens, but they're not going to lash out on every citizen. They're going to lash out on black citizens who they feel can't clap back.
Or whoever their target is. I mean, it could just be women or Latinos, yeah, whatever. Yeah,
people of color in general. All kinds of, you know, and it's so obvious when 2 weeks ago we got to see the same quote-unquote protest, but this time we got ARs are strapped around people and we're not met with the same level. We're not met. Yeah, the misinformation is so transparent and clear. We have videos of police trucks dropping off bricks. We have videos of people looting. When you pay attention to the video, they are not black. Yet you have people playing this video. Reporters playing this video and saying Black Lives Matter when there isn't a black life on camera. It's wild. It's like the fix is in, but it's not working. And now they're scrambling, which is why, you know, these CNNs and all this stuff, they're not going to make it through it either, because you just see how quickly they lean to whichever side they feel like they lean to make the slant. It's just ridiculous.
Just going back to Biden real quick, I feel like there's a certain type of Democrat who wanted Biden to win so that they could stop paying attention to the news. And I think we need to actively address that, like, over the coming, like, I still think, you know, we should vote for Biden, because I don't know what happens with Trump continuing in the White House, but that cannot be the reason why. It can't be a situation where we go back to, you know, just assuming that everything is being taken care of. And you guys mentioned it earlier, that sort of political geometry of every time there's a Democrat in the White House, there's a triangulation that goes on where they have to, you know, appear tough on crime or conservative politically or conservative fiscally, like all these different things that they feel they have to do, whereas like Republicans never feel like they have to make concessions in the other direction.
Yeah.
But Democrats, like, that needs to stop, and it can't be a thing we stop paying attention
to. All that does, it's just accommodating white supremacy.
Mm. Yeah.
That's all it is. And that's all it has been. So whenever we're asking for real equality and these bills get to a point and legislators that get it to a place where maybe it could get a vote, and then it gets fucking destroyed and watered down, that's because then there are Democrats who are accommodating the white supremacy on the right or in their own districts. And I think that's, maybe that's the difference, is we are less, companies too are less willing to accommodate white supremacy too. Like when they just say, hey, fuck y'all, bro. If it ain't Black Lives Matter, fucking, I don't give, take your dollars somewhere else. We don't give a fuck. We actually don't. We don't give a fuck. Because the racists aren't making the shit that's good. But go ahead. Go over there if you like it. And I think that's the attitude that the Democrats also need to have, is to stop accommodating these white supremacists. And it's easy. You can say, look, we're doing this because that's right. And I think a lot of arguments against like these structural changes, like, they're only going to appeal to the economics of it ever, because there's no moral argument against any of these things. We're seeing everything. So now it's like scrambling to be like, well, then how can we obscure this in these other ways to try and, because this can't get too much momentum. But I think really what we need to be doing, and I think that's a place where I'm finding myself at, is like, I'm not going to accommodate white supremacy. So that means if I see it, I will call it out. I'm not gonna be like, oh, there's white supremacy. You know, that was like a very 2017, 2018, 19 way of being like, what, there it is. I mean, we see it. Yeah. But then I was living in a reality where you see it, and then like, if enough people on Twitter know who this person is, maybe they'll get fired, and that's the little bit of justice I can taste. I think we got eyes on bigger prizes now.
The status quo is not inherently good, like Americans have loved to tell ourselves. The status quo of America is not that America is inherently good. It's that it's inherently white supremacist. America's soul is not inherently good. Like, I mean, I can just hear Biden saying that, like, deep down, Americans are good. And Americans deep down are white supremacist. And that is something that needs to be actively addressed constantly on a daily basis.
Yes. I just want to yes and that so much. You know, when there's a high profile racist incident, so many of my like well-meaning white friends always rush to be like, this isn't who America is. America's better than that. Better than that. It's like, where? When? When was America better? Like this is who we are. I think that distinction, Jack, that you just talked about, like, it's uncomfortable and difficult, I think, for a lot of people to swallow that this is who America is. And getting back to normal, quote unquote, getting back to the status quo would just be a return to all of these oppressive, fucked up, toxic systems that have ran shit for so long, because this is who we are. You know, when we say like, oh, it's a broken system, it's not really broken. Like we've chosen to set it up this way. And that's the system that we have. So like, if you don't like the system, it's not that it's broken. It's functioning the way it was designed to function, which is badly if you're black or brown.
Mm-hmm. Brody, finally, what is a myth? What's something people think is true, you know, to be false, or vice versa?
Something that people think is true, and I absolutely know to be false, is that you do not have to check up on black people right now. the past week has been really busy for me personally. Like, I've been like, I've been kind of sick, so I haven't been really able to go out and protest. So I've been really active online. I've been like sharing links and stuff like that. And there's also like attention from the entertainment industry. So I'm like, I gotta like get my resume together. I gotta like finish some scripts so I can send to people. Ironically, during this time where I should just be taking care of my own, you know, like mental health and stuff.
Yeah.
And even though people have good intentions when they like call to like check up and like text and stuff, I think I answered probably like 100 check-ins last week. Oof. And I don't want to anymore. one of the first things I saw on Facebook for white people to do during this time was just like a list of things you could do to like examine your own self. And one of the very first ones was to check up on your black friends. And I screamed at my computer. I was like, no, we don't need it. I mean, I'm only speaking for myself, really. But just if you're going to check in, don't make it like a 5,000 word essay. I have gotten a couple of those recently. I have not answered them, and I won't. I'm just going to pretend that they got lost in the mail or something. Mm.
Or that it just has to be okay that, sure, you sent it, but we're not obligated to respond to it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the other thing. And I just stopped responding because it was so much labor to then like, because half the time there were people who I think weren't even like looking for, I'm like a good, you think I'm like one of the good white people, right? Because there are a few buckets these things fall into.
Yeah.
Some are like, I just want to tell you like, I get it now. Mm-hmm. And like, and I have a lot of work to do. That's one. I'm like, great. I'm not going to respond to that. Cause that actually sounds like a person who knows they don't need to be responded to. They just wanted to affirm like their solidarity.
Yeah. Even close friends are different than, people who I haven't talked to in like a year or who I haven't seen in like several years. It's like, you can check in on me a month from now when you know that honestly, like as a comedian, one of the worst feelings is right when you're about to go on stage and you're going through your set in your head, and you're kind of trying to concentrate, and someone tries to strike up a conversation with you.
Right.
My brain has felt like that moment, like all week. So, like finally, I've like taken some time to decompress because there was a minute where I really had to like look at my like I had to check in with myself, and I realized that I was just like, I am in a manic state because of things going on in the world.
Yeah.
And what I don't need right now is that added guilt of not texting a friend back, which is something I answered all of those texts except for the one really long one.
in my mind, I resolved in myself. I'm like, I pray for somebody to be like, hello, back to me. Cause I already had the fucking, they would have got third degree burns from their fucking phone. Like that's how I lived with it. Cause I'm like, I'm not in a situation at all where objectively I'm being rude. I'm like,
no.
People are dealing with generational trauma in their own ways. I had to do the same thing, Brody. I was so angry. I became useless. I became inert. And I realized I had to begin to put these things on a scale. I say, what do I want to do? If I can stay angry, or do I actually want to have my head in this game to be able to give everything I have? Because if I want to stay in the game, I really have to take a second to make sure I know how to step back onto the field again. Because I was just running around out of, like, gassed.
If they had texting back in the civil rights movement, like in the 60s, we would have heard the same thing, I'm sure.
It's definitely, it's tough. But I tell everybody else, I will be more impressed when I see people, like, if somehow I see a viral video of you, like, cursing out your racist dad.
Yeah.
Like, and doing that and flipping your Thanksgiving table because someone decided to say black all lives matter, Frankie, or some shit. You know, I'm like, wow, don't talk about it. Be about it. And I think the other thing too, is we'll probably get into this with that tone deaf celebrity video. We've heard enough words. So at this point they have no fucking meaning. They really don't.
Yeah. And is it my imagination? Cause I've only seen the video once. Was that video in black and white or was it in color? Oh,
no, you know, we got into this, man. The black and white, the monochrome, the nuances, man, of the aesthetic helps set up the black-white binary for the viewer. That's why it has depth, not because people didn't know how to color balance or people's skin was looking weird and this is just an easy way.
Lacey, finally, what is a myth? What's something people think is true you know to be false?
This is probably random, but my myth is that Guy Fieri is a douchebag, because Guy Fieri is a great guy, and he's donated millions of dollars to unemployed restaurant workers. He's openly spoken out about Black Lives Matter long before we reached this point with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery. He's out here for the people. And all this time, you know, I feel like we've been kissing asses of other problematic ass chefs because we thought that his shirts and spiky hair were ratchet. But he's actually a great guy. And I love him.
100% agree. He's got a good heart. And he, like, I don't know, he, like, walks the walk as well. Like, he gives back. He doesn't just say stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like, I can look out to, like, 2015 when he was out at protests in D.C. for Black Lives Matter. Like, he's been around and, like, he's donated so much money to worthy causes. Like, just Googling it, I was like, is he a saint?
We should start making prayer candles with him. I bet they exist.
Right. I want a Guy Fieri prayer candle so badly. But I just think we always look down on him.
Yeah.
Miles was talking on a recent episode about how his relationship to Guy Fieri really made him, like, he had almost a spiritual experience in reevaluating how he feels about Guy Fieri.
He truly did.
Yeah. I'm the same way. Like, celebrities just occupy brands, and, you know, like, Einstein is still the smart guy brand. Jordan is still the basketball brand. And, like, I feel like Guy Fieri, like, and Larry the Cable Guy kind of got mixed up at some point, like, in our national consciousness, and they're just, like, fully different.
That's exactly what it is, because I think that Guy Fieri's aesthetic has long been co-opted by racists and by just kind of, like, the, you know, the white people that you really just disdain, like that one uncle in the family that you're like, oh God, he's coming, and you know he's gonna be drunk off beers and doing all his blackie jokes. And we just thought that was what Guy Fieri was doing because of how he dressed and how he talked and the food he cooks. We were wrong. So
we weren't listening.
Yeah.
Nope. And there's so many people getting canceled right now, quote unquote. So it's nice to like lift somebody up and it not all be so bad. And I, hopefully Guy doesn't go back, but he seems to have been doing the right thing for many years now. So I'm not worried about having to walk this back.
Somebody tweeted a picture of his hands, and just a yet another lovable thing is he has a plump little baby hands. Not little. They're not the size of a baby. They're like grown up sized hands that are in the shape of a plump little baby hand.
I bet they're really soft. Adorable.
I know. They've got to be so soft.
Nice.
I love that that's Jack's contribution. He's like, and he also has plump baby. Yes.
Jack's like, okay, next topic. It's great. He's great.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.